Dan dia mengenal tiga doktor sebagai tadi di Professor of International Law in the Florida State University College of Law. And when to my doctor colleagues I mentioned his name, in the name he received extremely positively about his knowledge in this area. In speaking on fifth plus provisions and junior agreement and the impact on access to medicine at national and global level. And I would like to thank you for the understanding of patients for the average for this talk.
Well, thank you very much, Director Priyadarshi, and thank you very much for getting the title of my talk out of the way. It's a pleasure to be here in a room with so many old friends, and probably some old enemies too. Many of the people in this room go back to the beginning of time in this area, I'd particularly like to single out, though, a person I noted in the front row, Director General Precious Matsoso, who played such an enormous role in standing firm against industry pressures in the late 1990s and early 2000s, and really was a leader in making sure that South Africa and the African continent ultimately received the access to medicines that they need. As Director Priyadarshi noted at the outset, this is not a new subject. In fact, the ink on the Doha Declaration was hardly dry before we began to express concerns about provisions of regional trade agreements or plurilateral trade agreements or preferential trade agreements, I'll call them PTAs, that were being negotiated in the immediate aftermath and which seemed to present potential obstacles to access to medicines. The signed but not yet ratified Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, is but the most recent manifestation of a trend that's been going on for a long time. Before I turn to some specifics about the TPP, I'd like to make some general observations. TRIPS Plus provisions such as those incorporated in the TPP are the logical consequence of the way the International Framework for Research and Development, Production and Supply of Medicines and Related Technologies is organized. Today's predominant R&D mechanism is grounded in a patent-based funding model that depends on high prices to generate capital for investment. Commercially valuable patents are owned by large pharmaceutical corporations that promise high levels of return to investors, which in turn are dependent on large volumes of sales of high-margin products. The countries in which the major pharmaceuticals are based approach the economics from a national interest perspective, in which the objective is to secure the highest return from overseas sales. Those returns provide a benefit to the national economy in terms of financing R&D infrastructure, employment, and increased value of domestically based enterprise. This is not a secret or a new discovery, but it's an important fact that underlies the issues concerning PTAs. And it's easy to be critical of, let us call them, certain governments where the major multinational corporations are based. But as a thought experiment, it's important to ask what a country with a comparable combination of established industry and political economic power would do in comparable circumstances. Would other governments behave differently than certain governments? My suggestion is that most countries capable of exercising mercantile power to protect their overseas sales will do so. So this isn't a matter of identifying a particular bad actor, but rather how to address the underlying structural issues. And this is a question which the UN Secretary General High-Level Panel on Access to Medicines has been engaged in for the past several months. I'm sure that many of you were at or saw the hearings in London and Johannesburg and the great attention that's being given by the High-Level Panel. And we hope we'll have a very good result, or they will have a very good result, by the end of June. Coming from the United States, you'd probably like to hear a few words about the prospects for the TPP and whether or not it will be approved. And I don't really have any particular magic insight into this question. As you probably saw in the news this morning, President Obama is in Asia promoting the TPP. The Asian governments and Asian business community is supporting it. And just recently, of course, our International Trade Commission issued a report which actually showed there to be very marginal gains or losses from the TPP. It's a non-event from a U.S. domestic economic standpoint. Of course, Ambassador U.S. Gerald Froman was quick to say, but you haven't taken into account enough the additional returns from strong patents, which raises an interesting question to the people in this room. Is that the added benefit that we're really looking for from the agreement? But I suppose it's evident that President Obama is certainly going to drive strongly to get the agreement approved before the elections. Both presumptive candidates, candidate Trump has expressed a general disdain of trade agreements, although it's not exactly clear why, but it certainly throws things into some state of uncertainty. Presidential candidate Clinton has opposed the TPP, but she supported it before she opposed it, and so I suspect that if she's elected, she'll find a way to reverse her position again and support it. So don't think we can take any real bets on this, but the U.S. typically, at the end of the day, approves these kinds of agreements, and so it wouldn't be entirely surprising. Turning to the specifics of the TPP, it really doesn't represent a dramatic break from the past 15-year trend of TRIPS Plus provisions in PTAs, but it does raise some new and additionally problematic elements. I know we don't have very much time. I'm going to run through what I think are the highlights of the potential problem areas so that others certainly have time to speak. But first, that countries will need to provide patents for new uses of known products or new methods of use of patented inventions of previously known compounds. The good news on this front is that the provision that would have effectively negated the type of provision that India adopted as Section 3D was eliminated from the agreement, so it wasn't adopted in its worst-case form. Countries must link registered patents with drug regulatory approval, providing at least a notice and an opportunity to seek a preliminary injunction, or alternatively simply to block approval based on a patent. Linkage is another issue which everyone in this room is familiar with. Linkage presents the largest scale problems for the countries with the least well-developed legal systems, countries where preliminary injunctions may last for a decade because there's no one who can effectively challenge them. The most widely reported and controversial provision in the TPP is the 8-year period of exclusivity for newly approved biologic products or the alternatively incomprehensible 5+3 formula. It wasn't much discussed during the negotiations, but it's certainly an important point that Article 39.3 of the TRIPS Agreement, which provides a basis for regulatory exclusivity, probably does not cover biologicals. As you all know, it covers new chemical entities. So one of the reasons the bio industry was so actively pressing for the biologics exclusivity period was to fill this gap in the TRIPS agreement. Again, a major issue. We don't have time to go into all of them in detail. There's a requirement that customs authorities will have ex officio power to seize goods in transit based on suspicion of trademark infringement. Again, another well-worn issue here in Geneva. We recall the seizure of goods in transit through Dutch airports based on patents, but patents are not specifically covered in this provision in the TPP. There's a criminal trademark provision. I'll call it a stealth provision. The criminal trademark provision makes it illegal to repackage and relabel using a trademark, a registered trademark of a party. This provision, not much mentioned, could wreak havoc with parallel trade worldwide because there is jurisprudence to the effect that reusing an existing, quote, non-original trademark may in fact constitute a trademark infringement. The TPP investment chapter enumerates intellectual property as a protected investment and authorizes investor-to-state dispute settlement, including a problematic compulsory licensing exemption. The Eli Lilly investor claim brought against the government of Canada under the NAFTA represents a very substantial threat to the sovereignty of the Canadian courts and to the Canadian patent laws in general. While I think that Eli Lilly is abusing the ISDS process and will not succeed, it's important to point out that this provision constitutes a major threat and that health ministers certainly have to be sensitive to making sure that ISDS provisions are controlled under any new agreements. There's an artfully named transparency and anti-corruption chapter of the TPP, which includes an annex which gives private third parties the right to challenge decisions by national health authorities about the drugs that can be listed on the reimbursement formularies, thus potentially depriving all of the health ministers of the right to make independent determinations regarding what drugs shouldn't be on their formularies. And I should note that the IP chapter does recognize the importance of the Doha Declaration and that nothing in the agreement will prevent ministers or governments from addressing public health, but it doesn't really say how conflicts with Doha will be resolved. There's no specific mechanism to do that, and conflicts are inevitable. Regional agreements are not inherently bad. We can imagine a lot of good public health-oriented regional agreements, right? Regional agreements on sharing R&D expenses and results, approximation and establishment of regional drug regulatory authorities to increase efficiencies, regional production, regional purchase pooling. So the word regional agreement shouldn't be taken as something inherently bad. It's the way that the current ones are being negotiated that may be at least somewhat bad and something that really needs to be addressed. And of course, everyone in the room knows that the health ministries are not given a major place at the table in these negotiations. So one big question for all the health ministers in the room is, how do we get you at the table, right? How can you be more forceful in the negotiations at the table? But ultimately, and the problem I mentioned at the outset, is that there is an underlying structural problem with the whole system in which medicines are, the research and development is undertaken, the production is undertaken, the marketing is undertaken under exclusivity rights, which tends to lead to very distorted results. And we'll only cure the problem of regional arrangements when we cure the underlying structural issues. There are quite a few other things I could mention. I won't. I'm a professor. I could literally talk forever until I died. So we won't worry about that. But my final observation, and most critically, is that states have a core obligation to protect the fundamental human rights of their citizens, including the right to health. And nothing that's negotiated in a PTA can prevent the government from taking the necessary measures to invoke and defend that core obligation. So that's just something that every government should recognize and put into practice. Thank you very much. I apologize if I took too long.
That was extremely enlightening. I think we thoroughly enjoyed it. And I feel less guilty about switching the order around because the head of WHO practically came to listen to you.
Yeah.
So you could take out a little time for this and talk to you.
Thank you, I also observe, the panel speakers. Professor Abel, thank you for your presentation. I was able to listen to an exciting part of it. I'm here just to support the importance of access to energy. Because if you look at the leadership priorities of the report, access to affordable quality medicine, including generics, is a priority for the organization. Of course, you are the experts in terms of trade agreement and all the others. But I agree with you in one respect. You know, the right of the individual to care is enshrined in the WHO Constitution. So what is the space for Minister of Health to contribute in all these we will chase them. As you said, they are not even around at the table, right? If you are not around the table, I will show you around the menu. It took the time and we were going forward, implementing sustainable development. It is important that we find the right balance. I believe in innovation. No innovation, no major breakthrough. And in order to support innovation, you need to think of mechanisms that can encourage people to do it, and to get to, you know, the regulation and mechanism. So I think it is important also to protect the foundation for innovation. But having said that, you know, new innovations, including medicines, vaccines, or other products, are here to benefit from. And the individual who are sick or impoverished and do not have the ability to pay, cannot benefit from the miracle invention of science in the universe. So we need to balance how to reward innovation, but at the same time making sure that access to medicine is affordable. And the way we are going, many countries are going to go bankrupt. Many countries are going to go bankrupt. How many countries are going to find their way out of cancer? Diabetes are very expensive to see in the heart. But I know as an institution, we strongly support prevention, first and foremost. No matter how good you do with prevention, there will always be people who have the disease. And how do limited health take care of those people within your limited health budget? That's why I always say, to President and to Prime Minister, the Minister of Health should get double pay or triple pay. I really mean it. Why? Because they are at the beginning and the failure of prevention. So, I mean, it is important that we understand the burden and the challenges for our Minister of Health. And we need all your support and all your good ideas and how to make this a better world. Leaving no one behind, including inability to pay user fees, inability, because I believe, as I said today, user fees punish the poor. User fees stop people from seeking treatment early, because they cannot afford it. Is it because they cannot afford the service of a doctor, or they cannot afford the medicine? I mean, is it not look at it in a silo. This is an end-to-end mechanism that we need to look at the whole end. So where are the areas that we can find solutions to help government? Now, I also noticed one thing from country. The Minister of Health do not necessarily agree with the Minister of Canada. I don't think that's how to offer. So the country policy incoherence is going to help the country the biggest. So first of all, I believe in policy coherence, look at your country situation, and exercise your authority as a country, and take the right actions to protect it. Ambassador, Honorable Ministers, if you would allow me to roll up again to another event, I would like to take a leave of absence. Thank you so much for this important.